May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
Good afternoon and welcome to Attention Please. KPTZ airs Attention Please to draw our attention to the good work being done towards a better informed and more resilient community. I'm Phil Andrus. With me are Frank Redman, superintendent of Quilcene Schools, Stephen Murakami, who's a school construction planner, and the principal of K through 12 in Quilcene, Sean Moss. Welcome to you all.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So our topic is the community of Quilcene, with a special focus on the Quilcene School District. We will begin with two elections, one which almost within a hair's breadth succeeded, and the other which failed. Same bond, totally different outcomes. Count me in for Quilcene. We'll talk about that too, a new organization, a community organization in Quilcene. We'll learn what that organization is doing to make Quilcene a better place to live and to work. And we'll start with Frank, who is the superintendent, as I said, of Quilcene Schools. You had two bond elections, one which came within half a dozen votes of passing.
If five people would have voted differently, the bond measure would have passed.
And then you put it to the public, to the Quilcene District voters a second time, and?
The vote was much different. We went from almost the 60% supermajority that's required to just under 50% voting yes in the April election.
And how could that happen?
I think there was more of the community became involved in the vote. There was a larger turnout in the second election. I think there were a number of things that added to that decrease in support. The April election happened just after everyone received their April tax bills. And there was a growing sense of concern that we heard largely through social media that the plan that we had wasn't the plan that many of our community members wanted. So after that second election, we spent some time doing some investigation with our community, and we found that there's a lot of work that we still need to do to make a plan that is just right for our community. And that's both in terms of the scope of the project, what we're trying to accomplish, as well as the cost of the project.
So between vote number one and vote number two, did a significant number of people come to you and tell you that they either were having second thoughts or strong first negative thoughts about the bond?
Not directly. Most of that feedback came via social media.
And you were monitoring social media.
I was watching it. Social media isn't the best place to engage in a nuanced conversation. We had several meetings in the community, in various places in the community, so that we could bring people in face-to-face or through Zoom so that we could have those more detailed conversations. One of the things I like to say is nuance does not carry in the public discourse. So a platform like social media that allows for people to expound on certain topics without maybe all of the information that they need to have those details correct can spin conversations in directions that make the idea seem more negative than I believe it was in reality.
And there were also, I've been told by a friend who lives there in the Quilcene area, some fairly significant attacks on individuals. I'm not going to ask you to elaborate on that. I'm not going to either. But in fact, that was part of the campaign. Was there much of an overlap between the people who came to your public meetings and the people who were dominating the social media conversation?
There were a couple of individuals who were dominating the social media conversation that showed up to a couple of our meetings. But I would say that most of the people who came in person were very positive about our bond effort and seemed to be in favor of that. Steve and Sean were both in many of those meetings and can maybe either refute or support that notion.
Yeah, I would agree. I was also monitoring the social media to help the school district. My name is Steve Murakami. I'm a vice president with OAC Services out of Seattle. And I work to help school districts across the state plan for their facilities' futures and execute construction projects. And so I've been working with Frank for the last few years on the bus barn replacement project. And being a third party neutral, I was able to try to respond to the social media claims that were just outright wrong and trying to correct and provide information so that they had data to make their own decision. The groundswell of social media comments really was taking it into a more political direction. A couple of common trends that I saw were the funding mechanisms at the state level have to change to support school districts. And until that happens, people won't support from the local level. And then also folks wanted to see more transparency in the process and they wanted to see a design up front. And the only problem with that is to get to a design level worthy of showing, takes a significant financial investment for a district to hire the architects, the engineers, to do all the geotechnical site surveys, transportation studies, all the kinds of things that are required to go into a conceptual design.
So there was a campaign, and the campaign proved to be successful. Were you shocked at the outcome?
I was shocked at the difference between the two outcomes.
What is your plan for your next move?
Right now, we have our facilities committee that's reformulating, and that's going to be drawn together with from members from the community, students, parents, staff members, all looking at our facilities needs and recreating our long-term goals. You asked earlier about what we were trying to accomplish with the bond. We had three main ideas that we were trying to accomplish. The first was replacement of the elementary school. The second was the construction of a dedicated career and technical education facility. And the third was a kind of a combination of a replacement of our weight room and make improvements to our outdoor athletic facilities and fields.
Describe the process, including Steve's part of it, the process that led up to the first bond, especially with respect to the involvement of people in the community.
We started in 2018 and then into 2019, really working with the community to find out what would be the set of needs and the scope of things that we would like to accomplish, things about a replacement for the elementary school because it's an aging building, some joint use spaces, trying to have as much local work as possible, spaces for visual and performing arts or updated infrastructure, kind of a broad scope of things that we heard from the community. So we tried to package all of that into those three major projects. We took all of those ideas from the community and put together a staged plan. And the first stage would be to replace the aging bus barn. We have a bus barn that was built in the mid-60s that had a very understructured roof system to the point where roofing contractors weren't willing to get up to replace the roofing that needed to be replaced. So based on that, we thought, well, if we start down the path of, you know, dominoes have to fall so that subsequent dominoes can fall. The first one would be to replace that bus barn, to have an updated facility for both our maintenance and our bus folks. Once we take down the old bus barn, that would give us some real estate, if you will, some space on campus to place the new elementary school. And so that's kind of our thinking for that initial push towards creating the bond. In the background, what was happening at the same time is the state ran a study of schools that were in seismically hazardous zones. And Steve can speak a little bit more to this because he was on the committee that kind of oversaw this process. They did an assessment of our schools along with about 500 other schools in the area. And we had two of our school buildings that were very high up on the list for receiving funding for seismic upgrades. So with that information that we were going to receive money for seismic upgrades for two of our buildings, but not the elementary school, we thought the elementary school was the thing that we would have to self-fund to correct, to get it up to seismic standards. And so leave those other two for later on once we get that state level funding.
Of the 295 school districts and the 500 schools tested, Quilcene had the high school score in the top 10 of need across the state, and the middle school scored somewhere in the top 20. The elementary school didn't score. They actually bypassed scoring it because the building was not cost feasible to upgrade. It was so far gone. The structural system and the foundation supports, you cannot make those connections to a new foundation system. And so the elementary wasn't even in consideration from the state committee of engineers that ran the assessments for this seismic study. We got accused of, in the bond campaign, of running this bond measure under the guise of safety in some of the social media posts, trying to guilt in voters into a yes vote because of this claim of safety. But it really is true that the elementary, middle, and high school definitely need some seismic reinforcing. And when the big one hits, we are concerned. You know, the seismic code requires the building to stand long enough for the occupants to get out. It doesn't mean anything for next day occupancy. We're not talking resiliency. We're talking safety to get folks out of the building, all the students, all the teachers, and all the staff. And so there's still a major concern with the elementary school building.
So we've talked about the bus barn. We have talked about the elementary school. Not so much about the athletic facilities. I remember the gym from my youngsters playing basketball in the gym. It's an old place. I mean, recognize Quill Scene is not a wealthy community. The Spotted Owl decision took a lot of income potential out of pretty much all of the communities along that side of Hood Canal. And probably for Quill Scene, it's never recovered. It is a tough place. And so I would imagine the school has been neglected because of a lack of funding and maybe a lack of a desire to put a bond issue to the voters. And you have a plan for planning your next step. Do you think you'll lower the amount to sweeten the bond a bit?
I think we'll have to look at it, and this answer is going to sound somewhat political. We're going to have to look at all of the avenues. We're going to have to reprioritize the list of things that we heard 4 or 5 years ago and really kind of dive into looking at the cost modeling and figuring out what's possible. We've spent a lot of time with the school board and their connections to figure out the limits or the perceived limits of how much tax we could add on comfortably to our taxing district. And we started from that figure to work out what we could spend on a bond. So we'll start again from there. What do we believe from information that we're receiving from our voters? What do we think that we could afford? And then build out from that level of affordability what we might be able to accomplish.
Sean, with respect to your job as principal and your job being overseeing really all of the teachers and all of the students in a way, how is your job negatively affected by the condition of the structures themselves, the buildings in which the teachers teach and the students are students?
That could be a very long answer. There's been numerous days where we've come in and it is 50 degrees in the elementary during the wintertime. There's days to where it is raining and the water is coming in through the roof. Nearly every day, there's at least one breaker that pops somewhere. Buildings, on top of just being the walls differently, they weren't wired the same as they are today. And so nowadays, we go one-on-one Chromebooks. Students all have devices. They're not using them all of the time, but there is a lot of learning that happens with those. And that's not what these buildings were made for. Right now, if you go down to our elementary school, we have half that's on the sun side, that the rooms are probably 85 to 90 degrees. And so that's certainly that's a long day of learning for both students as well as teachers.
Okay, and very soon school will start and the weather is projected to stay just about what it's been. And for people listening in Port Townsend, my observation, I think it's backed up by what people have told me statistically, it's warmer in Quill Scene typically in the summertime than it is in Port Townsend. In fact, I was in Quill Scene a couple of days ago, and I was amazed as I came down the hill how much warmer it had been, even compared to where I live in Chimicum. So we've talked about the school. We've talked about the bond. We know there's going to be another bond. We know that Steve has some plans. There's ashes. There's been burning. The bond has been burned. All of the paperwork has been burned, metaphorically I'm speaking here. And out of the ashes, at least from what I can see, a new organization has come, and that is Count Me In for Quill Scene. And I would like to know about that organization. That had been my intention to talk primarily about it. Well, we're going to talk some about it because I think it's very important and very encouraging. You know, we had a negative, an unfortunate, a challenging occurrence with your school bond, but the community can rise from that. The organization seems like it's a way of getting to that rising. And I would hope that at least two of you can talk, because whether you live in Quill Scene or not, you work there and you know the community. What is this organization? What has it done already? And what sorts of plans does it have? And who is behind it?
Count Me In for Quill Scene is an organization that's been around for a little more than a decade.
Really?
And I'm a board member in that organization. And one of the things that we work towards accomplishing is, as a general rule, trying to improve the conditions for people in South County. And we do that through a number of different ways. We try to connect funding through from local giving circles to projects that are happening in our area. One of the things that has recently come about is this walking history trail. We're planning on having go through Quill Scene. And have several stops along the way where folks can walk from one kiosk to the other. And at each kiosk is an art and a history installation. So they can learn more about the history of Quill Scene. They can learn more about the current status of Quill Scene, and they can see some of the art that was originally installed in the Seattle Aquarium several years ago.
Excuse me. How did that art get from the Seattle Aquarium to Quill Scene?
The artist was known to one of the other board members. the Seattle Aquarium, said they were changing in their remodel a few years ago, and they asked the artist to take his artwork down. And his artwork was several plexiglass panels of painting of local sea life. And each one of those layers of panels would have a slightly different version or a slightly different set of sea life on it. So it almost gave kind of a three-dimensional view of a look into a particular segment of the ecosystem. He took these down into 9 different panels and had to do something with them. And through the connection to one of our other board members, had them stored here with the idea of eventually having some kind of a display system in the community. And that idea has evolved over time until recently we were able to apply through AARP for a community improvement grant. And we were the lucky recipients of those funds to help put this idea of a walking history path together.
Well, it sounds like a charming thing to do in the village. I've walked around it a bit myself, not knowing where I was, but it's small scale and welcoming, I think. But here we are again. You have a wonderful idea and lots of community support. But how about either those people who have legitimate beefs against it or just like to beef about things and like to bring things down? Are you finding any of that arising as yet?
I think a little bit, yes. We have been finding some of that. There's been more support than not. We've had a few community meetings where we've introduced the idea. In our initial planning stages, we had some community meetings about what we were planning. I got some feedback and made some adjustments. And then after we received the grant, again, we reached out to the community and things like designing benches and the placement of the kiosks. And we're trying to work with the community to make sure that as we create what these kiosks are going to be and where they're going to be, we do that in partnership with the community.
Always one of the concerns, too, is vandalism, though you never can prevent that entirely. You've got funding for the planning. Do you have a sense of when you may be constructing?
We have deliverables that are due late this fall. We have to have the kiosks constructed and the benches constructed. We don't have to have them sited or situated. That's going to be a longer-term project as we work with the county and the Department of Transportation, because some of these things will be in proximity to roadways. And then other installations will be some here on the school district. We have a couple planned here on the school district, and then others on private property along the 3.1-mile path that we have thought about. Nothing is set in stone yet, but our initial planning is about a 3-mile trail.
Mostly on the highway or off the highway?
It's a little bit of both. We have some that's coming down Highway 101, some that's coming along Center Road, and then the path, when it gets to the school, turns and goes along Linger Longer and then down to the Herb Beck Marina.
All the way down to the marina, it's a long walk then. That's good. It's good for people to take long walks. I remember talking about something like this with Greg Brotherton before he was Commissioner Brotherton. You had more recently a project on the school campus, the construction of, and here I didn't have anything to read about it, so I cannot tell you, I can't name it for you, but you know what I'm talking about.
Our Outdoor Learning Center, this is something that an exciting set of ideas that came out of thinking about what we would do after the second bond attempt failed. We looked around and thought, well, what might we be able to do with the old facility, the old bus barn facility? In our original plans, once the new bus barn was built and we started work on the new elementary school, we'd have to take down that old bus barn. Again, it had some serious structural issues. And we thought, well, since we didn't pass the bond, how might we be able to repurpose that structure? Can we make it safe enough? Can we think about ways to reimagine that space to extend the learning from the classroom into our environment so that we have students that have more places and more ways to learn? Steve Murakami and I have a great partnership. As you said, we've been working together for a couple of years now, and it's gone past the normal sort of business transactional relationship. We've become friends through this process. And there's been a lot of he and I bouncing ideas back and forth. And then through Steve and his connections, he's really been able to pull together a really amazing set of volunteers and opportunities and direct and indirect benefits directly for this project. Steve, I'll let you talk a little bit about that, because you've been instrumental in causing what was kind of this idea that was percolating between you and I to the reality that we have here today.
So before Steve, is the intention to just repurpose the bus barn and find elves to get up on top to fix the roof, or to tear it down entirely and just use the space?
Well, Steve can speak more eloquently on this than I can. It's a little bit of both, actually. We're repurposing, we're addressing some of those structural issues. We're never going to be able to take what is there and turn them into classrooms. There's too much work that has to be done to take it from a pole building that has some serious structural issues into something that would look like a normal classroom today. So we're trying to find a middle ground in there somewhere, somewhere where the space can be usable for our students and for our community, but it's not a regular normal classroom like you might imagine second graders coming in to spend their whole day in.
So Steve, the roof remains apparently.
There are gonna be a couple places that drip, but the new program's gonna be fine with the drips and the air flowing through. You know, like Frank said, it wasn't cost feasible to think about turning that building into a heated, conditioned, safe, electrically supplied, plumbed building that would be a replacement for a traditional classroom. But the one thing that really drew me to supporting Frank and Sean is that they're approaching education with a really unique challenge of engaging the students through their personal passion and really trying to figure out how to reach each student individually. And in our industry of education over the last 10, 15 years, teachers have been able to use tools to differentiate approaches to understand how students learn differently. Some are very visual, some learn through movement, kinesthetically, some learn through hearing. And so as teachers are now applying different ways to engage students, us on the facility side are thinking about how do we differentiate learning spaces. And so what this building is going to allow Frank and Sean and their teachers to do is put their students in unique situations. You know, if you want to take art outside and do a Jackson Pollock painting and throw paint around, there's no better place than this covered outdoor learning center. And when we took on this approach, we brought several partners to the table. We brought two architectural firms, one that focuses primarily on K-12 based out of Tacoma, TCF Architecture. And then we got Methuen, based out of Seattle, that's a world-class, one of the leading architectural groups in our state, if not the West Coast. Got some passionate people together. We got contractors with Leidig and Washington Patriot. We got electrical mechanical out of Fife for with BCE and CPL for structural and civil. And so we brought all these professionals, like-minded, wanting to give back to create this new learning space.
So Steve, it sounds like you're spending money.
We've spent a lot of money. All in all, with the cash donations, the material donations, and the in-kind labor support, we're over $400,000 of investment into Quilcene for the students and staff in the community at large.
And this is largely a volunteer effort.
This was a huge volunteer effort. This was an amazing thing. We had artists come in and perform music. We had crab boils. We had the community coming out and bringing us lunch. And we put out probably 1,000 invitations for people to participate from Western Washington. And companies came out of the woodwork supporting their employees to come out for the day, for the weekend. Some came with checks. We had a few surprises where Bassetti Architects out of Seattle and PCS Structural Solutions showed up with $2,500 checks when they came out to work. And so we've been leveraging this initiative not only to have the people that design and build schools for districts across the state, but for us to get out of a pandemic, get our hands dirty, swing a hammer, come together and celebrate what we're all trying to do, which is build world-class learning environments for the people that are going to harness and use that energy in the right way to engage kids, to make education happen for them where they're at. And that's what Frank and Sean are all about. That's why we're supporting him.
And this began after the bond failure.
It did. It was a huge pivot where Frank and Sean were down a couple of classrooms. We were moving pieces around, trying to figure out how do we restore some of the services that over time had been lost. This was a really unique approach to take the center of the campus, the heart of the school, which was a gravel parking lot for buses, a half dozen cars and deliveries right in the heart of the school. We converted that into a site plan that has varying zones of overlapping opportunity. We have an outdoor wood pavilion that is an amazing structure that, with the help of local landowners, the Freemans, 5 cedar columns were harvested. And within 2 weeks of being pulled out of the ground, were set on steel plates on a concrete foundation that we all worked to pour. And then a huge wood structure framed over the top. And so that you have these sweeping cedars holding up this beautiful roof. We have another company that's donating a steel roof for the pavilion. And so we'll get up there and we have a long gutter that's going to shoot the water into a rock garden collection zone. It's going to be just a unique place for kids to clump and socialize and be outside the four walls of the classroom. And it's going to already, you know, I've already saw it in the first week of school that teachers are thinking about how to use these assets now and get kids out and engage them in really authentic, different settings outside of those, the classroom walls. It's been fantastic to see the excitement around it.
Steve, I want to butt in if I can and maybe pull Sean into the conversation as well. One of the things that has been important to us is not create a new space that we were foisting on the students or the staff, but we really involved the students from the very beginning about the ideation and the planning and all of that. And Steve, you were very helpful, but maybe Sean, you can talk maybe a little bit about how we got students involved in the design process and then the students that we had involved in the, through the volunteerism and the building part of this.
Sure, thank you. That's what I was just writing down a minute ago. But so when this whole idea came about, Steve and his team started coming on campus and we had recruited a group of students that we thought might be interested in taking part of this. And what, four or five times before the end of last school year, again, Steve and his teams of architects, engineers, Steve and his team started coming on board about a month before school was out. For those meetings, they met with some super excited students, got the students' ideas and overarching beliefs about what this space should be. From that, they took it back to the professional level, and what they came back with blew everyone away. Calling this just an outdoor learning center, it's so much more than that. It's really a transformation of our campus. Then the whole summer, these kids have come back on, and as a class, they've been working side by side, learning skills, and in the process, many have changed what they want their high school and beyond plans, what they do after school, those plans have changed. And it's been transformative, not just for the space, but for these kids as well.
And that is Sean Moss. He is the principal K through 12 of Quilcene Schools. With me also has been Steve Murakami. He is a planner for school construction. And Frank Redmond, who is the superintendent of schools for Quilcene Schools. I've often teased my Port Townsend listeners. I'm not a Port Townsend resident. I live out by Chimicum, but I tease them saying there's much to Jefferson County that is not in Port Townsend and is not the on-ramp to the Hood Canal Bridge. I find that many of my listeners really don't know much about the rest of the county. Quilcene is a lovely spot. It's a great swimming hole in the summer. I was there about 3 days ago. End of Linger, Longer Road, but there's a lot more in Quilcene too. My thanks to all three of you for this conversation and to our listeners as well. Attention Please is aired on Mondays at noon and at 5 on Saturdays at noon. It's also available as a podcast at kptz.org. The music in the background you're hearing is by Quilcene's one-time village band, Locust Street Taxi. Let's walk the trails of Quilcene together and admire the school campus as well. I'm Phil Andrus.
The rain falls from the sky. The water flows through the pipes. I guess it's natural like you.